From Washington, VOA presents Issues in the News.
Welcome to Issues in the News. On the panel this week, Nahal Tusi, foreign affairs correspondent for Politico, Richard Lautendress, correspondent for TVA Nouvelle Canada, and our moderator is Shayna Estulin, Washington correspondent for I-24 News.
Welcome, everyone. I'm Shayna Estulin, and here are the issues we are going to cover. Impeachment. The trial against a U.S. president gets underway for only the third time in American history. And peace in the Middle East. The White House is finally expected to roll out their big peace plan. Hi, guys. Nice to see you. Nahal, Richard. Lovely to have you here on a cold winter day in D.C. We've got to start with impeachment, obviously. That is the biggest news of the week. I will start with you, Nahal. It's been a long week. It feels like this week has been a month. But what stood out to you in these several days of impeachment coverage?
Well, obviously, the thing about the milk, right? I mean, the fact that the senators are only allowed two things that they can drink when they're in these proceedings, and that's water and milk. I'm slightly kidding. No, what stood out to me, I guess I would say that Adam Schiff's opening presentation really was scathing and harsh and eloquent to the point where even Lindsey Graham, a staunch Republican defender of President Trump, told him he did a good job.
And isn't it interesting because Adam Schiff tends to rub Republicans the wrong way, but he got praise from them.
That's right. I mean, even the ones who you already know they're going to vote to not convict President Trump, they think that he was pretty good out there. And now that being said, yeah, he apparently recently said that he feels like he's introducing himself to a bunch of senators. And one of the most interesting things that somebody said was Justin Amash, the now independent former Republican who does support impeaching Trump. And he said that he feels like this whole week, like people like Schiff and others who have been laying out the case, that he said that he's pretty sure many of his Republican colleagues that it's the first time they've actually listened.
Right,
to the basic facts.
Because everybody's watching news from their preferred cable network. Richard, and by the way, to Nahal's point about the milk and the water, I was in the Senate chamber yesterday watching from the press gallery, and there were several senators chewing gum furiously. So I think gum might be a loophole here, something they can actually eat. So Schiff did a really good job. I think even Republicans are saying that. But there was a misstep in the beginning, a misstep with Jerry Nadler, who attacked Republican senators who weren't voting with the Democrats on some of the amendments to the ground rules. And he said the fact that they're not voting with the Democrats on this, they're engaging in a cover-up. And that seemed to offend even the moderates that the Democrats are trying to reach out to, trying to convince. So do you think that hurt the Democrats' cause?
Well, I think that obviously it shocked even the Chief Justice, John Roberts, who's presiding the session. I think in the end, I believe it'll have this impact of just solidifying the Republicans' position that what is presented is fundamentally biased. It's interesting to me that as much as what stood out was how strong Adam Schiff's initial presentation was, I was not surprised, but I'm not sure that this way of hammering every details that we heard last fall during the House hearings will have the outcome they expect from the Republican senator. So to answer your question, Shanna, I feel that Jerry Nadler's comment hardened what was already a not very open, receptive audience on the Republican side. And add to this, even if Adam Schiff said there's a method to our madness when he was going back to every small details of what we heard last fall, I have the impression that it's just going to take the last bit of openness, or that it's going to close the last aspect of openness from the Republicans to any way of considering these impeachment arguments.
Yeah, so it's not as if there were, he was speaking to necessarily a very welcoming Republican audience, but it did annoy at least Lisa Murkowski, who's one of the moderate Republicans. Look, the senators look pretty bored, even the Democrats. It's the same point almost being hammered, as you said, over and over and over again. And Nahal, the Democrats also know that at the end of this, he's going to be acquitted. I mean, Trump is going to be acquitted, barring some bombshell. And even if there is a bombshell, likely Republicans will stick with the president. So why go through all of this?
This might sound crazy.
Go for it.
And I'm not saying that this is definitely what they're doing. But look, maybe they just are thinking about the history books and doing the right thing and getting this on the record. You know, yeah, they're hammering every detail, but that goes into the congressional record. And one day in the future, people are going to look back at this crazy day and age and want to know exactly how it went. And so maybe that's one thing they're thinking. And, you know, they're also no doubt thinking about their own base and their own political futures in November. And so, you know, I'm sure that there are plenty of people who find this whole thing boring because it doesn't have enough pizzazz or whatever. But there are others who are riveted. I was in an Uber the other night. And I was the driver was listening to the impeachment proceedings. And I was like, wow, you're really listening to that? And he said, well, yeah, because in my country, we don't have this sort of thing. And I was like, what are you talking about? He's like, oh, I mean, he was from China. And he was just saying, he's an asylum seeker here, and he was saying that they just don't have this sort of open system. They don't have this type of thing where you can find out what these lawmakers are thinking. And to him, it was just fascinating. And so that kind of was a reminder to me that I shouldn't get so worked up about things like pizzazz.
I think also, I believe just the way you imply now how that in the future, maybe even short term, it'll be a way to go back to the so-called moderates on the Republican side and say, okay, we had a strong case and still you could not acknowledge anything. You voted like a sheep with all the other ones, with the line that came from the White House or the Republican leadership. I think it's going to be something that will come up. Could be next election, could be in 2 years and a half from now. So I think that's one thing. However, just to add to the comment of your Uber driver, I worry that the mass of Americans, they're also trying to reach by, again, re-explaining what they found out of the hearings in the House. I think it's just going to be perceived as, I'm afraid it's going to be perceived as the Democrats getting into the smallest little thing, trying to find something, even if they present this as a major threat to the Constitution of the country, the security of the country. It's going to be, I'm afraid, when you get so into the details, it's going to be seen as they were looking at every possible way to go after this president, who in the end was elected, which brings us to the Republican defense. They are challenging the result of the 2016 election. Not sure there's going to be the famous Obama electorate moving to the Trump side.
So you don't think this is going to convince some of the American public that's watching? And it is interesting because they have to speak, both sides really have to speak, but more the Democrats because they're prosecuting. They have to speak to so many different audiences. Like Nahal mentioned, they have to speak to the history books, to how this is perceived years from now. They also have to speak to moderate Republicans, and they have to speak to the American public. And of course, on Saturday, when they wrap up, the Republicans get their chance. The president's legal team gets their chance to defend the president. What is their defense going to be, Nahal?
Well, I think a lot of it's going to be about process, about claiming that this whole situation has been unfair, that the Democrats haven't really given a chance for Trump and his supporters to present their case, although there's some irony with that. And, you know, that they're going to basically claim that there's a number of things. For one thing, they'll say, like, even if this happened, it's not a big enough deal to remove a president from office, especially so close to an election. I mean, there's a number of defenses that they're going to run through, but I do think it's really important to remember that, you know, when you were talking about why are the Democrats getting into the weeds, and I think it's partly because one of the Republican defenses is, so far, when they go out and they talk to the reporters, they're like, we're not hearing anything new. There's nothing there. And so the Democrats are trying to say, look, like, here are like 50 things we've laid out. How can you say there's nothing there? But I do think that there's nothing there is definitely going to be an ongoing defense of the Republicans. Now, what's the irony? The irony is that they have voted against or tried to stop the introduction of additional evidence. And there's a lot of signs that they're not going to stand up for the ability to call witnesses that President Trump himself has blocked from testifying. And so the question then is, if you guys want more details, why don't you allow these witnesses to come in? What are you afraid of?
Right. And that is what Chuck Schumer has been saying again and again in front of the cameras. Chuck Schumer loves to talk in front of cameras, but this is his perfect way to do it. He has a good reason to now. Well, all politicians love to talk in front of cameras.
He's like a sunflower and the camera is the sun.
He really does glow. But one of the arguments also that you have been hearing from the legal team and on this matter of witnesses is, and really this second article of impeachment, which is obstruction of Congress, is that there was an obstruction of Congress because the House Democrats didn't exhaust every option. They did not go to the courts to subpoena the witnesses, these witnesses like John Bolton. So why should the Senate do their job for them?
And I think it's a strong argument. Even if we go with the Democrats saying, well, if we had gone to courts, it would have extended the entire process probably over the 2020 presidential election. That's probably true. But in the end, it's easy to make this even simplified argument of saying, well, the mandate of the Senate is to consider what came out of the House impeachment inquiry. I do not judge the quality of whatever was done and not done from the House, but they can easily limit whatever they say on this point. So that's why, again, I think the obstruction of justice obstruction of Congress is going to be an interesting argument to defend in front of the senators because it's perceived as the weakest of the two article of impeachment. I believe that the defense starting on Saturday, the president attorneys are going to say that they're going to try to diminish the value of the entire process and minimize the strength of the whole thing by saying, even in the House, they did not go after this. We can say the courts would have extended the entire thing, but in the end, it's easy to understand. I think just to go back to what I was trying to say about getting into the nitty-gritty of the inquiry that happened in the House is that at a certain moment, people want a summary. Okay, so what is the main thing? I feel that the way the president's defense is going to come out is to say, listen, this is as simple as this. He's doing his job. They're trying to stop him from doing his job. That's the president's way of behaving, is a perturbator, is a different type of political leader. And I think, if not everybody, definitely not on the Democratic side, but the electorate, Republican electorate, will exactly understand what they want to hear.
It's much easier for them to have these simple sound bites because they can just say all of this is, you know, nonsense. The president did nothing wrong and the Democrats are out to get the president. But the Democrats actually have to present all of this evidence, which can get repetitive. But I want to zoom out for a minute, Nahal, since you are a foreign affairs correspondent. This involves another country. Two countries, really, Ukraine and Russia. How do you think they're perceiving all of this?
Well, I think the Ukrainians are extremely concerned about the long-term damage this is going to do to their relationship with the United States. They already have been worried. I mean, their government is pretty young. It's trying to root out corruption. And it really relies heavily on hundreds of millions of dollars in financial assistance that the U.S. provides them to fight Russia. And so they're concerned. I think the Russians are probably delighting in the chaos that this is causing.
Yeah, that's always what they delight in, is chaos in the United States. All right, let us go to break. When we come back, we're going to dig into impeachment and peace plan, which is not complicated at all. All right, we'll see you at the other side of the break.
Issues in the News is coming to you from the Voice of America in Washington. If you would like to download the program, it's free on iTunes. Just click on the iTunes tab on our website at voanews.com. While you're there, check out our other programs, Press Conference USA and Encounter. Also visit us on Facebook and leave a comment or two. Then like us at Current Affairs with Carol Castiel. Now back to our panel, Nahal Tusi, foreign affairs correspondent for Politico, Richard Lautendress, correspondent for TVA Nouvelle Canada, and our moderator, Shana Estulin, Washington correspondent for I-24 News.
Okay, we are back. Nahal, Richard. Nahal, I stopped you really in the middle of your point on Russia and Ukraine. So before we get to the peace plan, if you wanted to continue that thought.
That was basically it. I mean, just this idea that, you know, the Russians are going to delight in the chaos. At the same time, you know, if the Republicans are making the argument that now is not the time to remove a president from office so close to an election, you could argue that on a geopolitical front, that's a good point, right? I mean, if you keep the president in office like the Republicans want, that does to some degree add a measure of stability. And that could throw other countries like the Russians off their game a tad if President Trump sticks around, not to mention if President Trump is reelected, as many other countries believe he will be.
You report for Canada, Richard. How are the Canadians viewing this? How is the rest of the world, other than Ukraine and Russia, viewing this?
I think they're very much interested in the outcome of this impeachment trial. People in Canada in particular remember perfectly well, I mean, the older ones a little bit, what happened with Clinton 21 years ago. And there's a lot of sympathy for Clinton. I think they see this, the importance of the impeachment process. Donald Trump is not popular in Canada, and it's perceived as a way to underline again what the president has done as in exaggerating the use of his presidential power. So in the end, I think it's being followed. People are interested in what is happening. And mainly, I think they understand that the outcome is already known, but they see this as a constant movement within the U.S. society to challenge the way the president is managing, or Donald Trump is managing the presidency. And they like it in Canada.
Canada has, like, the most lovely little scandals. Isn't there something about donuts recently in Canada? Yeah. And it's just, you guys are so lucky.
You know that when you argue about the amount of donuts you bought and the price you pay for them, we don't have major problems.
Yeah.
You guys are good.
The donut gate. Okay, so sort of sticking with impeachment but moving to another subject is the president announced that Benjamin Netanyahu, Israel's prime minister, and Benny Gantz, Netanyahu's main political rival, that they have been invited to the White House or to Washington to discuss the peace plan. Although it was a little strange. First, you had Pence inviting Netanyahu. He's in Israel. And then you had the White House putting out this statement that the two men are going to come to Washington to discuss national security issues. And then the president tweeting out and saying, any details that have been reported are just speculation. And then telling reporters, actually, we're going to put out the peace plan in the next couple of days. Now, what's your read on that and the way they sort of rolled out?
Look, messaging has never been the Trump administration's strong suit. I mean, generally, they're just often not able to coordinate very well. And the president himself is a key factor in that because of his Twitter prowess. That being said, you know, it does sound like they will reveal the second half, the political half, Jared Kushner's peace plan for the Middle East. And from what we're hearing, it's very, very, very pro-Israel. I mean, let's not forget the people who are not invited to this or apparently are not going to show up, at least, are the Palestinians. And so it's very pro-Israel. At the same time, you know, and it's also sort of a take-it-or-leave-it type of thing. It's like, you know, here's the plan. It's not about negotiating. You take it, you leave it. Israel's going to control a ton of territory. The Palestinians are not going to get a full-fledged state. So these are the outlines that we're hearing. And look, you could argue that this is a non-starter. It's dead on arrival. A lot of people will argue that. But at the same time, there are some really hard truths that this administration says that it is laying out there about Middle East peace. For instance, this idea that they're not going to give the right of return to descendants of every Palestinian who was ever displaced. The idea that the Palestinians, that they're not going to get as much as what they want in Jerusalem, and that the Jerusalem is Israel's capital. They are making statements that I'm confident a lot of past administrations knew that eventually they would have to make, but they weren't willing to do so. And they were just saying, well, the Palestinians and the Israelis have to work it out. So look, you could argue that it's like really stupid for them to do this because this is not going to go anywhere. On the other hand, they've sort of set a new tone. And I wouldn't be surprised if down the line you see future administrations build on that to some extent. For instance, my understanding is the Democrats, if they win the presidency, they're not going to move the U.S. embassy back to Tel Aviv from Jerusalem. So that's something that they've, you know, the administration has basically kind of carved in stone. So
right. The thinking from the peace team seems to be other administrations have tried this sort of, you know, dancing around the issues approach. We're not going to do that anymore because it has gotten no one anywhere. So here's the reality of the situation. Jerusalem is Israel's capital. That's our starting point. Let's move on from that. The Palestinians have already come out and said that any details that have been released or reported on, they reject all of it. And they're issuing a red line to Israel and to the United States. Don't cross that red line. But the president did say that we've spoken briefly with the Palestinians. So, Richard, any chance the Palestinians come on board this plan?
I don't think so. The president claims, as you're saying, on a plane flying to Florida, that he had talked or somebody had talked to the Palestinians, and he expected them to react negatively. But it's a very, and I to quote him, a very positive plan for them. we're all very skeptical. But again, I think it's obvious that this administration has taken a strong and hard position against the Palestinian leadership. And as much as we'd like to find a solution that would please the administration would like, or hopefully to find a solution that would please both sides, they have decided to just charge towards something different, recognize the Israeli sovereignty on the Golan, adopt a favorable position to Israel on the settlements, all these, and exactly what was said earlier, too. So the idea that even Benny Gantz, he had said that he was going to come, and now it's not totally sure, but they said the leader of the opposition in Israel himself would show up at the White House with Benjamin Netanyahu, the prime minister, and the two of them, in the end, agreeing that this process and what is being suggested corresponds to what, in the end, the entire Israeli society agrees with, or pretty huge majority of the Israeli society agrees with, shows that I feel this administration can easily not give any thought, second thought, to how the Palestinian will react, because they have the Israeli on their side. I have the impression that the Arabs in the region are not showing any anger towards this initiative. Or
yeah, let's touch on that for a second, because two things, and those are good points you bring up, but two things. First of all, I think the administration says that they tried with the Palestinians in the beginning. They met with Abbas and that they felt rebuffed. But, you know, everybody can interpret this the way they want. But on the issue of the Arab states, it does seem like Arab states, especially because Iran has sort of become the central issue of the Middle East, that they are moving closer to the president and to Israel. So how does that sort of fit into this peace plan?
Well, I mean, it's very much a downer for the Palestinians. You know, they could always rely on the Arab countries to stand up for them. And now, not so much, when you have Saudi Arabia and the Emirates thinking to themselves, you know, we're tired of this Palestinian issue. We're way more concerned about Iran. And dealing with Iran means we need to coordinate with Israel. You know, it's very much realpolitik. In the long run, I think, especially after the recent events of this year, like a number of the Arab countries are thinking, look, we need to find a way to make our peace with Iran. And so perhaps down the line, the Palestinian issue could become once again a flashpoint for them. I don't know. Anything is possible. I will say one other thing. One movement, it's a small movement, but, you know, it's has some Palestinian adherence, is the idea of having a one-state solution down the line, one state with equal rights. And a number of Palestinians increasingly have come to believe that the two-state model just wouldn't have worked, and that it should be one state, but they should have equal rights, not an apartheid state, which they say is effectively what they have right now. And that is a movement that you could see grow. Now, of course, that raises questions about whether Israel can survive as a majority Jewish state. But
right, and that's the question. Can it be a majority Jewish state and be a democracy?
Correct.
If things sort of remain in the status quo. I want to focus on the timing and the connection to impeachment, Richard, because this is being rolled out while the president is on trial. Do you think that's a coincidence, or do you think that's intentional?
I think it's intentional. I think, again, during the last trip the president made to Florida, he underlined the fact that he would love to make this deal. This is known as the hardest deal to make, and I love making deal. I quote him word to word, as we say in French. And so, first, I really believe that he wants to show how a deal maker, a supreme deal maker, he is. And in this case, while his presidency is being undermined by this impeachment process, it would be a way to show he is in control. Add to this, he invites Prime Minister Netanyahu and the leader of the opposition of the White House on Tuesday. Tuesday being the day, because if his attorneys, his defense team, does not use the time they have,
the president's attorneys
during the impeachment trial in the Senate, they have 3 days, Saturday, Monday, and Tuesday, and they are giving signs that they're not going to use their entire time. Brings us Tuesday, where the questions, the senator questions, and then what kind of attention are we going to give to whatever happens in the Senate if the president comes up with his plan with the two Israeli leaders and a big event at the White House, in the Rose Garden, or in the East Room? It becomes something that will definitely, and finally for him, suck the attention away from the impeachment process and brings it back to him.
But it could end up being a debacle if Gantz doesn't show
absolutely
up and Netanyahu comes, if the plan is derided, including by the international community, and then everybody's like, look, you're doing this just to boost Netanyahu right before his election. It could end up getting a lot of negative.
It's a
headlines.
Big gamble, absolutely.
So clearly, both of you very positive. You think everything's going to work out. We're going to have peace in the Middle East. That is all the time we have. Thanks thanks to Nahal Tusi, foreign affairs correspondent for Politico, and Richard Latendresse, correspondent for TVA Nouvelle Canada. This program is produced by VOA's Kim Lewis. Our engineer is Justin Thwaites. And I am Shanna Stulen. Thanks for listening.